up happier than ever? No way. He doesn't get to win.
Whoever is bitten by a werewolf and lives becomes a werewolf himself.
The census taker once tried to test me. I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
Gina! But I don't care, darling, because I love you.
Why do you eat people?
Not people. Brains. I can feel myself rot.
Now, Sid, don't you blame the movies. Movies don't create psychos. Movies make psychos more creative.
Wheel in.
Out with friends?
Well, a boy's best friend is his mother.
Hello, welcome once again to Dark Discussions, your place for the discussion of horror, film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. I am one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the US of A, and with me in, well, on a cell phone in the state of Michigan.
This is Eric.
Eric, how's it going, sir?
Oh, you know, other than computer problems, everything's fine.
Right, right. Well, hopefully your computer
gets start
working out, you know, maybe tomorrow or over the weekend, and at least you get Skype enough.
Or maybe I'll have to spend several thousand dollars. Who knows?
Well, right. Yep. I had to do that last year, actually. And in the state of New York.
Hi, this is Mike.
Mike, how's it going?
I'm fine, Phil. How are you?
Doing all right. And in the state, the Commonwealth of Massachusetts.
Hey, everyone, it's Dave here.
Dave, how's it going, sir?
I'm doing okay. Busy week at work, but overall, not bad.
Excellent. For listeners who have listened to this podcast for a while, they may hear some difference. Abe actually has a excellent setup now at home where he will be heard without the tinniness that some people noticed in prior recordings. So, welcome to the 21st century, Abe. Welcome to the 21st century.
So now the bad puns will be coming in deluxe ultra stereophonic sound.
Exactly.
Fucking awesome.
And we do have a co-host from the Commonwealth of Virginia.
Hey, this is Barrett.
Barrett, how's it going, sir?
It's going well.
Excellent. So for folks who are new to the podcast, this is a Dark Discussions podcast, as mentioned. Basically, we critique, review genre films. So that would be horror, sci-fi, fantasy, thrillers, techno thrillers, mysteries, grindhouse, art house, midnight movies, cult films, foreign films, and the whatnot. Basically, try to talk intelligently about a genre that deserves intelligence. You can find us at darkdiscussions.com. You can find us on Twitter at darkdiscussion1. You can go to Facebook, where we have a group called Dark Discussions Podcast Facebook Group, and you can join in the conversation there. We do have the website, as mentioned. Eric, what can people find on that website?
Oh, they can find a bunch of stuff. They can find every single podcast that's available on the Dark Discussions Network. They can find an article section where people have written articles for you to read. Or I think some are just also posted from other sites as well. There's also every single episode of Dark Discussions, as well as all of our spinoff podcasts, available for download for free. There's also a link to our Patreon account. Patreon allows you to support your online artists financially. Producing this show is not free. We have to pay for things like equipment and server fees and renting movies and so on and so forth. So if you'd like to contribute to offset that cost, we would appreciate it. You can follow the link on the front page of darkdiscussions.com, or you can go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions. For every $5 a month that you care to donate, you'll have the opportunity to submit a topic for us to possibly do a show on. We take all the submissions from our patrons and on a quarterly basis draw one at random to do a show about. So again, that's patreon.com/darkdiscussions, or you can follow the link on the page.
That's right. That's right. And I forgot to have Mike pull up the random generalizer, because tonight is a new pick for the Patreon, as a matter of fact.
Oh, Jesus. Ooh. Oh, my God. Why do you know I got to prepare these things in advance? How many numbers do we need?
425 you can put in.
425 donations. Wow. Since the beginning of time, minus the, what, dozen or so that we've actually done.
Right, right, exactly. All so right. If a number pops up that is one of the dozen, I just go to the next number. We haven't had that happen yet, though.
All right, are we ready? Drum roll. Yeah. Wow! That's amazing.
What?
425. Huh?
Oh, you serious?
I'm all serious. Right.
Well, Holly Maciak is going to be happy about that. And it is... what's Holly Maciak's favorite film, everybody? Someone must know from being friends with her on Facebook. Anyone? No one knows?
I don't know. I know
Dude,
she
like
definitely
know.
Know.
I mean, do you know how many movie titles I see on Facebook every day?
All right, yeah, there's a hint. She does a production on stage.
Oh, is it
Evil
Ryan
Dead?
Horror? Oh!
Oh, Rocky Eric, Horror?
Eric. Or a picture?
Yeah, Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Oh,
jeez. Oh, my.
Let's do the time warp again.
That'll be the exit song for sure. All right,
no
so...
Singing, Abe. No singing,
Rocky Horror Picture Show will be a Patreon coming up. So we have Candy Man and Rocky Horror Picture Show. So congratulations to Holly. All right. Sounds good. We'll add that to the list probably within the next 3 months.
5 years.
No. That comes right up. We got to do it soon enough. But anyway, that's the Patreon pick. So anybody else who wants to jump in, make sure you do, as Eric mentioned earlier, and you could have your film critiqued and dissected by Dark Discussions Podcast. All right, so I think we can get into our topic tonight, but before we do have one thing, which is today is October 8th, since some of our listeners, such as Pam, like to know when these are recorded, because sometimes they are released weeks, and then, as Eric always says, even years later, which was the case with Ozark. We recorded that like a year earlier, and we released it a year later. And this is October 8th, 2020. So, Eric, with all that stated, what is our topic tonight?
Tonight, we're going to be talking about the 2020 Russian language film Sputnik.
Судя по всему, на орбите произошел некий инцидент.
От меня-то что требуется?
Семирадов, моя фамилия. Требуется ваша консультация.
Зачем они меня задержат? Можете объяснить?
И носителя.
Чего еще от меня надо?
Если я руковожу исследованием, почему от меня по-прежнему все скрывают? Мы рискуем жизнью человека. Герой Советского Союза.
Если герой, значит готов ко всему. В том числе и пожертвовать собой. Надо было мне сразу вам все расскажу.
Видите?
That's right. 2020, as Eric mentioned, it's considered a science fiction horror film directed by someone named Igor Abramenko. It stars a handful of folk, but basically the two leads are Oksana Akinshina and Fyodor Bondarchuk, though there is two other actors of note as well, or star in it, but the I don't know which one is which because they're all Russian names. The film is receiving fairly good reviews on Rotten Tomatoes. There's 102 reviews with an 88% good rating, which is quite impressive for science fiction or horror. And it's getting good reviews by mainstream sites too, not just the blog, so such as a Variety, Hollywood Reporter, RogerEbert.com, the Wall Street Journal, and so forth. I guess we can go around and discuss how we heard about this film and what we thought about it, and we'll start with Mike, since Mike, you actually were the one that suggested it.
Okay, let's just be clear. When you say suggested, what it meant was we were brainstorming titles. That was the last one I remembered reading about or seeing mentioned, and so I threw it out there and suddenly became, I wanted to do it, and I don't understand how that happened. Nevertheless, it was just a thing that I had seen mentioned on the interwebs, just like a whole bunch of other movies, and it just, I guess probably because it's like the one Russian title that I could pronounce, it just somehow stuck in my brain, and I threw it out there. So that's how I discovered the film. And that's how we ended up talking about it this week. And I just finished watching it, an hour ago. It was a movie that I started liking a lot more than I ended up liking. It is kind of a slow burn horror film. I really like the creature effects in it. I kind of like the creature design in it. Spoiler warning, there's a creature in it. And it has some nice kills in it. I don't know that I liked where it ended up going at the end. But given how much of especially the start of the film is very much just talky, I was kind of surprised at how quick I felt it going and how kind of engrossed I was at the beginning, especially since it's a subtitle film, right? And I couldn't understand a word any of the Russians were saying. But yeah, I kind of liked it. I liked it a lot more the first hour, probably a lot more than the second hour or second 45 minutes. But I would certainly give it a recommend. It's a good creature feature, a good science fiction horror film, and a Russian film. And it's apparently the first Russian science fiction horror film, according to the director. So.
All right. Very good, Mike. For me, I sent two messages to Eric. The first one was Sputnik, 2-hour movie, 1 hour in so far. It's really good. And then after it was over, I wrote, good film, but just misses being great since second half was not as solid as first. So basically exactly everything that Mike just said,
Said
too.
Uh-oh. So, I'm in trouble now.
But yeah, the first hour is awesome. I love the talky stuff. I like the special effects and the monster and all that. And then when it gets into the second half, when it becomes more psychological, as in human psychology stuff, it kind of floundered a bit and wasn't as good. But all in all, it was still a pretty solid film. And it has some really good kills, really good scares, really good thriller elements. I would give it a thumbs up. If the second half had been as good as the first half, this could have easily been a top three for the year, but as a result, it'll be somewhere lower on my list, but still most likely a top 20 film unless something happens later in the year. But yeah, it's a good film. All right, let's go with you, Eric.
Yeah, I'm pretty much on the same page. However, I don't think you guys are giving a really accurate description. Like first half versus second half. It's not like the first hour is awesome and the second hour sucks. It's more like the first hour and 40 minutes are very good and the last 20 minutes get a little confusing. Because I think the story, the through story, the main like sci-fi story is really solid. And I think the acting's well done. And I also like the creature effects. There's a subtext thing going on that I really don't understand how it's supposed to add to the story and enhance the movie. And we can talk about that later. And that's really what I think what we're referring to when we say the second half wasn't as good. So really, that would be my only qualm with the film is that we'll talk about it after spoiler flag. But yeah, there's an aspect of this story that I really don't think enhances it very much. It's just kind of confusing. But apart from that, I think it's very good and I would recommend it.
All right. Very good. Abe.
So I came across Sputnik when I first came across the trailer. Usually trailers, you know, for someone like Eric are kind of pretty crappy, but this kind of got me interested because I love creature features and, you know, I don't see very many Russian horror films. So, you know, I watched this actually just an hour ago, just like Mike did, so I can keep everything fresh. And overall, I did like this movie. I kind of end up being where most everybody else is that I think the first part of this film is very, very awesome. I really think the creature was really cool. I did like some of the dynamics between it and the characters in the sense of how it works. I can't really talk about that without getting into spoiler territory. But I did think it was really cool and interesting little critter. The effects were really good as well. Some pretty gruesome kills. And yeah, I know what everybody else is talking about. You know, Eric, especially when certain aspects of the film that is kind of like weird. And I also didn't feel like it didn't change too much. I mean, if it was removed completely or just, you know, edited out, I don't think it would have changed a whole lot. But overall, I did enjoy watching this movie. I was really pulled in and I thought it was a well-made film. If you like creature features, if you like science fiction films, or in the subgenre of science fiction horror, I think you might like this movie. But as we kind of dissect it, we'll kind of give our deeper thoughts. And yeah, those are my thoughts. That's how I feel about it so far.
All right, sounds good. And Barrett?
I really like this film. I kind of agree with everyone else. I'm more in the line of Eric, though. I think that the horror part was really solid, and then I feel like it was trying to have a surprise ending that I just didn't understand. And yeah, we'll discuss that, I'm sure. I liked the kills. I thought the creature was really awesome. And I really liked the atmosphere and the 1980s Soviet period that it had working as part of the plot. So it was a really enjoyable film. I thought it was pretty well acted, and I would definitely give it a thumbs up.
All right. Sounds good. So it looks like everybody's pretty close to the same page.
Yeah.
So
just to be clear, I don't mean the first hour and 40 minutes are awesome and the last 5 minutes were terrible. I do not mean that even remotely.
Right. Yeah. I don't think any of us thought even the part that was just okay was terrible. We just think it was okay.
I was trying to express my personal opinion that it's not half and half, and I thought you guys kind of made it sound like it was half and half. That's all.
Well, but it's not a one. I didn't measure the time. It's not a 1 hour 40 and five either.
Fine.
Right. I think everybody understands what was meant is that the beginning was stronger than the end. I guess that would have been the more appropriate way
right.
to to phrase it. So it was really just a semantical thing. Yep, absolutely. All right, so Eric, do we have a wiki?
Wiki. All right. The lone survivor of an enigmatic spaceship incident hasn't returned back home. Alone, hiding inside his body is a dangerous creature. Well, that's a little spoilery, but...
Yeah, that's...
Okay.
Yeah.
That's what IMDb says.
Wow, that's terrible. I went in... I mean, I saw the trailer, or at least half of the trailer with my wife, because it was one of those movies that she said, all right, let's take a look. And she, after halfway through the trailer, she goes, yeah, this ain't my thing. So I went in basically blind. And yeah, so I was completely surprised at that reveal moment.
Well, to be fair, I don't think the filmmakers are trying to hide it, because the poster makes it also very, very obvious.
That's true.
Right. I forgot to say that this, I had first heard about this tonight, like 2.5 hours ago, and I finished it about a half hour ago. So I had no idea what this movie was going to be about.
But it's not really, look, if it's something that's revealed in the first act of the film, that's a setup. That's not really spoilery. That's telling you what the film is about. You know, so if this was, you know, an end of show reveal or an end of film reveal that the creature was inside of him all along, then yeah, I would say that's a spoiler. No, that's the premise of the movie. I mean, you could make it less spoilery, but then it's also going to be a lot more generic, which is, you know, Cosmonaut returns and something followed him or something, or brings something with him.
Well, to be honest, based off of the half of the trailer that I watched with my wife, whether it was because it's just Russian people and the way they are in general, no stereotype, even though it is a stereotype. They all seemed like they were like in dazes, so I was thinking maybe this is going to be one of those Invasion of the Body Snatcher type films, you know. So because the lead actress in the commercial, the trailer, I swore she was like possessed or an alien being or a robot or a clone or something, because her personality was like dead in the trailer, like, you know. So I thought it was going to be one of those. So when the reveal happens and I find out that this film doesn't take place in space and is really just on Earth, a lot of that stuff is complete surprises to me.
No, Phil, she just talks about science, and that's how people who talk about science are, you know.
Right. I was thinking it was more the Russian way, is that stoicism almost.
Yeah. Well, and Mike had a good point too, which is the depressed, dazed. Well, just for the fact that you're in the middle of Kazakhstan secret agents watching you. Probably not going to be too happy or act too joyfully either. So get further. All right, so now that we got the wiki and wiki and the poster, as Abe said, whoever said, kind of spoil it a little bit anyway, before we get into spoilers, we can just talk about general stuff first, if there's anything that anybody wanted to talk about that's general to the movie that isn't necessarily spoilery.
I really liked the music and the atmosphere of the movie. I felt like it really meshed well together. I know we've talked before about, you know, how music can ruin a movie. I thought it went well in this movie and that it just had a good atmosphere.
I also liked the music, but I thought it was edited very strangely. Like, there was more than one scene where the dramatic music was going on and then they like cut it off in the middle of a note. To the point where it was distracting me a little bit. So I enjoyed the music, but I thought the editing could have been a little better.
I probably didn't notice it because when there's subtitles, part of my mind is focused on those as well.
Gotcha.
I will say that the subtitles for this kind of stunk because they went by quick, so I had to stop and rewind so many times.
Yeah, I did too.
You need to learn how to read faster, man.
Yeah, I read pretty fast, but there were some that were like really quick.
Yeah. Well, because you know what I'm doing, Eric, is I'm trying to watch the screen too, because I want to see what's going on. Mm-hmm. And then you look down for a second to read the stuff, and then it's gone. It's like, God damn it.
Well, I did watch the movie twice, ultimately, so that probably helped me.
Right, right, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I usually don't notice the... I usually don't notice music, especially modern music, meaning which music tends to be a little bit more subdued and atonal and moody, as opposed to like your John Williams actually having a melody kind of thing that like and a hook that sticks in your brain. I tend not to notice that usually on like on a first watch, unless it they do something to really pull it up. It's just modern music modern films tend to downplay the music a lot.
Well, there was a striking moment at the beginning of the movie where really there's been no music in the movie up until a certain point. And then there's this cut to them driving down a road. And all of a sudden you get this very like louder than the rest of the soundtrack music.
That's oh, yeah. I know what you're talking about, Eric. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So it was, when the music kicked in, it was quite striking for me, at least.
I also really liked the opening scene. I love this very calm moment, and suddenly, because I wasn't sure how the creature was going to come into the story, and suddenly you just see the slightest shape moving across the top of the pod, mm-hmm. and start slowly turning the capsule open. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, and it was pretty cool that you knew what happened, but you didn't know what happened up until you saw what happened. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah,
yeah.
How's that?
I have to say that that random farmer or hiker was pretty nonchalant about what he found.
Well, they're Russians. They have no emotions.
Yeah.
That's right.
Well, they have them. They've just been drowned in vodka.
Or beaten out.
I have to say that I'm not very good with subtitles, but if the movie is really good, then I start not noticing that I'm reading them, and this movie was one of those movies where I stopped noticing that I'm reading the subtitles. It was nice.
Yeah, yeah, I would agree with that, too. It was weird, because halfway through the film, I had to do something for one of my kids. I had to go upstairs, and I was thinking that as a after taking care of what I had to do and coming back, which is I keep on forgetting that this is actually a Russian or a foreign language film, because like you said, Barrett, you know, it's as good as anything that you would see done in Hollywood, you know? So, I mean,
yeah, I hadn't thought about it until the very end, and I was like, boy, I haven't thought about subtitles in like an hour or more.
Well, I mean, for me, you're not watching Hamlet and seeing these characters giving long soliloquies where there's like a paragraph taking up the entire screen. You know, most of the time subtitles are a line that if you read well, you know, if someone has a learning disability, you know, like just dyslexic or something, I could understand that might be a problem. But if you read well, you should be able to read it in next to no time and quickly put your eyes back on the screen most of the time. So it shouldn't be really, with a little practice, it isn't that distracting. I still prefer to watch a film without subtitles if I can. But it does also help focus my attention if you happen to have a movie that is kind of lacking in its ability to demand your attention. But I don't think that's the case here. I do think, I did think like the movie, I did miss some of the lines a couple of times because, you know, things were moving quickly. I think the editing really did. I'm going to guess, and this is my standard response. Anytime I get a film that I'm liking and I can't understand why I'm liking it, I tend to say it might go down to the editing, because this really, I could see how this could have turned into a slog for the first hour, because so much of it is talking and so much of it is exposition. There are a few like beheadings and things in there. There's a few creature scenes, but it really is a lot of setup. It really is a lot of talking about, you know, character backgrounds and psychology and biology. And it's just, but I think they keep it moving. Like no single conversation goes on too long. The exchanges are done fairly quickly.
And I agree, because they also give you some new bits of information too.
Right, and they do things like turn some things around. Like you know, they have one particular conversation goes one way, and then turns out, well, it went that way for a very specific reason, had a goal in mind. I did kind of like the way that all played out. Again, mostly in that first hour, which is weird because then that's after that first hour or so is when it's, or maybe even hour and 15 minutes, when it starts becoming a little more actiony and cliched and a little less intelligent, in my opinion.
Well, and Mike, I'll agree with you that I generally prefer watching English language films instead of subtitles. However, I would say that when it's a foreign language film, I prefer to watch it with the subtitles rather than an overdub, because I find that if the acting's decent, the emotion delivered in the original language, even if you can't understand it, is more effective.
I agree.
Oh, absolutely.
I totally agree with that.
Well, yeah, I agree, but I've seen like all the European horror films from the 70s were all subtitled. I mean, not subtitled, I'm sorry, dubbed, because the actors all did their words in different languages, and then they just did it all in English or Italian or Greek or French or whatever, wherever they played the film. And I've never had a problem with that. And you know, like we saw The Platform this year, and I watched that with the dub, and that was good too. I know it's real hip nowadays to say subtitles is the way to go, but I'm all right with dubs, and I don't really have any issues with the dubs. I know in a lot of cases, I do. And in Europe, they do mostly dub anyway. Even today, they take like Hollywood films and they dub them, and on. So, America is like one of the few countries or exceptions that are now like poo-pooing the dub.
Well, I think it gets more of the performance. I think it's among film enthusiasts that watch a lot of foreign films. Might be saying that. I think if you ask your average film goer, they would be hesitant to even watch a film with subtitles. I did watch The Platform both with the dub and with the subtitles, and I still preferred the subtitles.
And I think if you ask the average American film goer, you know, do you want to watch a movie with subtitles? They'll say, "Fuck no." But yeah, they're not. But it's more the avid film watcher, you know, the ones that really dig around deeper for other things, in the local theater. I do think you get more of the emotion. I do think that you also have a thing when they do dubbing, where they try to come up with dialogue that better matches the characters' expressions, like what they're saying. So sometimes that's a little bit forced delivery and so it tends to be a little bit more awkward. It doesn't always work. Sometimes it works great, sometimes not. But like, I mean, even you mentioned the European movies, you know, some of the old Italian cinema, and you have an American actor or an English actor speaking in English with his voice dubbed in English because they're not even using the original audio. And that's just like also sort of a weird experience because and actually we've seen films, right? I've seen films where the actors have been dubbed because the actor was squeaky or whatever. And sometimes it's really distracting because it's not their voice. You can tell it's not their voice. You know? So it is, it's a personal preference thing. I'm not damning people who prefer, or like that. It's certainly a possibility. It's better than not watching it, but generally, and by the way, and there have been cases of really shitty subtitles. Right. I think Let Me In was one that notoriously had some bad subtitle issues when it was first released on disc, and that were different than, I guess, what was in the streaming or something like that. So anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, this film here, I think the only option was subtitled anyway. So besides a couple of people I work with, everybody would have to watch it with subtitles, at least in the United States. All right, so let's see. All right, I guess we can
want to throw out the spoiler flag.
Yeah, let's do that. We'll throw out the spoiler flag. Again, this is a sci-fi horror film. The first 5 minutes takes place in outer space, and then the rest of the film takes place in Kazakhstan and Russia. So for folks who are just that's the quick setup. But yeah, we'll throw up the spoiler now, and we're going to discuss everything and anything related to the film. So we will if you haven't seen the film, go ahead and see it. But if you don't mind hearing spoilers, just keep on listening, and yeah, it's up. All right, so let's set up the start. The setup basically, there's two cosmonauts in orbit, and something they're going to be coming down or do some stuff. And eventually, what happens is something happens. As Abe mentioned, you see like a shadow, and then even like possibly a movement of something that may be alive outside. And the next thing we see is the pod coming down on a parachute, lands actually must have been way off course because it landed on like land or something. A farmer or what the hell are those people called? Ooter or something? I forget the name of the ethnic group that's out there. A Tatar, that's it. We're going by, and they find one astronaut or cosmonaut dead with his head like ripped open, and the other one kind of like bleeding and kind of insane and even threatening. And that's the setup, right? I mean, that's the first 5 minutes. Did I say it right? Anyone want to?
That's pretty much it. Yeah.
I just wasn't sure the first one was dead or not because he seems kind of alive later on.
Yeah, well, I think that's a reveal.
It's a reveal. Yeah, he got better.
Yeah, he looks pretty dead. He looks pretty dead in that scene, but he wasn't.
Yeah, he does look pretty dead, but
a little corpsey.
What do you mean he wasn't dead? I'm completely confused.
So are we in spoilers?
Yeah, we said
okay,
so,
I just said it.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I missed that. But yeah, no, he was the guy they were mentioning in the infirmary who had the cancer.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
And they were still doing tests on him and stuff.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Half his face was missing almost.
Yeah.
The alien couldn't infect him because he was sick.
That's right.
He didn't produce the cortisol that the alien needed.
Right. Yeah, right. That's right. Because they thought, our lead actress thought maybe the alien chose the other astronaut or cosmonaut because he was more the personality that would get angry, you know, quick. But then we learn later that it may be even something else, which is he was the healthier of the two. So, yeah.
Well, and to be clear, it's explained pretty clearly. It's not just general health. It's the fact that the other cosmonaut was suffering from disease that prevented him from producing the amount of the specific chemical that the alien needs.
Right. Yeah. Oh, a hormone.
So, Mike, I was going to ask you about this because I know that you, in the past, have taken issue with movies that try and explain their scientific things too much, and if they're not on base, that really rubs you the wrong way.
They
do here.
It doesn't completely rub me the wrong way. I do point it out. I will roll my eyes, but I mean, I'm so used to bad science in movies, you know, that it's, you know, you're more likely to know. I'm more likely to appreciate good science than to really be completely bothered by bad science, unless it's something completely egregious. This to me, this is a very B movie plot dressed up in a good suit where the space monster wants to eat our brain juices.
Oh,
right.
That is a very Ed Woody kind of plot. And your cortisol is just, it's a fight or flight hormone. You know, we don't know anything about this creature, where it comes from, what have you. It's very silly to think that here's this alien creature that comes from outer space that just so happens to be adapted to eat our fight or flight hormone. That's kind of a weird thing. But again,
the suspension of disbelief.
It survived in space too.
Well, I would guess. I don't like. I know they talk about how. you know, when if you hunt, actually, didn't this come up in that in the one movie we watched earlier this year? Where you try to kill your prey before they know they're dead. So like you try to kill them quick. So because the fear spoils the meat.
What movie was that again?
That was the other movie where a creature was living inside somebody. What was the one where they were at the lake resort? The one that was actually in theaters. It was like the number one film in America for 5 weeks in a row.
Oh.
Invisible Man?
I can look it up.
No,
it was after the pandemic started
that thing
and only,
that, like,
only theaters.
Oh,
were...
The Wretch. The Wretched.
The Wretched.
Oh,
right?
Okay, yeah.
That was it. It would begin with a W. All right. So, So the idea that here's a thing that likes that taste, right? And so it's trying to scare the shit out of you before it kills you. I think that was a fun little twist. Again, scientifically, the whole thing is absolute crap as far as, you know, but, you know, it's B-level monster stuff. This is like Alien was a B-level monster movie with A-level production values.
Mike, does it track that cortisol is produced when somebody is afraid?
Well, it's your fight or flight hormone, so yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, at least they got that right.
Yay.
Right. Well, and, you know, I mean, I see your point, Mike, but, you know, I mean, it's kind of an interesting thing. I mean, that movie Life, starring Ryan Reynolds and Jake Gyllenhaal, that had a creature that kind of went into bodies like a parasite too.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of when I watched this movie.
So yeah, even though it's obviously hogwash that some alien creature would just, you know, but to be honest, I mean, I could go with it with a suspension of disbelief because whatever type of hormone that it eats wherever it came from, you know, it could be something similar to whatever this one was, you know, if we use the suspension of disbelief thing and believe mm-hmm. that the alien can be there.
No, I wasn't like sitting there like obsessing over the whole movie. I was just curious as to Mike's take on that.
Right. Yeah, so what happens is we have this woman who's like a, what is she? Is she a psychiatrist or something? I don't know.
A doctor of some kind.
Psychologist, I believe?
Yeah, something like that. And basically her career's down the tubes because she participated in helping this 16-year-old, but unfortunately required or caused this individual to almost drown. And so her career is going down the tubes, and this is being Soviet Russia.
She basically tried to use extreme measures to help him that they disagreed with.
He didn't drown. Everybody seems to be overlooking that point. He didn't actually drown.
Overlooking it. He got better.
Well, the point is,
but he was going to get worse because of his mom.
Well, that's the thing is that, you know, if no matter what a doctor does, if they don't get permission from the family, then or any profession for that matter, they could get their asses sued. And this is basically she did something without getting permission to do it. And so she kind of broke standards in a sense. And so being Soviet Russia, you know, you're dead or whatnot. You know, you don't have much choice over there. So she happens to have this general, colonel, actually someone important, show up right after a trial. Well, this wasn't even a trial. It was a hearing, a boardroom hearing, saying that he wants her to help him with something with a patient, and that he likes her because
she takes risk.
Yeah, she takes risks. Exactly, that's the word he uses. Yeah,
and still cured him. or, you know, helped him, is what he kind of says. Yeah, she didn't just take extreme measures. She actually helped him.
Right. And so she's basically a reluctant
hero.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't even say that. She's
well, that's the term.
Participant.
She's a reluctant participant. That's the word I'm looking for. Thank you, Eric. Now, because she doesn't really have many career options at this point. So she agrees to see what this captain, colonel, general, field marshal, communist, I don't know what the hell you want to call him. he's something. And agrees to look at this patient, knowing who the patient is. All right, he's a colonel. Colonel Sirim Radoff.
But he seems like a scientist as well, not just a colonel. He seems to have some kind of scientific background from the way he talks.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah, yeah. And at this point, he didn't sound to me to be nefarious that bad. You know, so the one twist in the film that we get into later where a character suddenly becomes evil and it's, we want to make weapons out of, you know, that crap, you know, that's that.
Yeah, that cliche.
Oh my God, that's a big cliche. And this film has that.
Right. Well, again, this is a Ed Wood kind of B-level movie, and it's leaning hard by the end into the B-level movie cliches. But which is kind of disappointing because I think it was better than that for the first, you know, for the it first is, part.
It is 1980s Russia.
Yeah, but I get that, but he goes bad guy hard.
Yeah.
It may be cliche, but you know it's true.
Yeah, exactly.
If there was an alien life form, even in this country, the Defense Department would be really interested in figuring out how to use it.
And he didn't get the colonel being nice.
Well, I guess it's that it seems like kind of a heel turn from where he was earlier in the film.
I think that was just what he was showing her.
Maybe. I'm just saying that I think they still could have had him be doing a lot of what he did and still kept some of the nuance and shading to the character.
Yeah, and I can agree with that. I just think that it didn't bother me too much. But I understand why it bothered you.
It bothered me. It just became less interesting.
I think that's what Barrett meant, Mike. Here's another semantical mistake. I kind of understood what Barrett meant, which is that it wasn't as pleasing.
Right, yeah.
And that makes sense. I would concur with that. Because once a lot of those things start popping up near the end, where and Mike sums it up perfectly by saying it gets into real B-level theater, then these things, these cliches, begin to, I don't want to say irritate, but they kind of lower what I felt was a really great film in the first half. And don't get me wrong, I love my B-movie madness and B-movie films, but it was unexpected after seeing the first hour that this film would suddenly have some of those elements.
Yeah, I mean, it's because, you know, for a moment, I thought they were going to a more gray area with the methods of our lead character, Tanya, and this military fellow. You know, I thought there was going to be some kind of conflict of gray morality. But it kind of went towards black and white. And so at times, it's not always a bad thing. At times, you know, some of our best stories have that kind of morality, you know, alignment. But I thought I would try to explore a little more complex, you know, areas. I mean, because we were getting towards human nature and stuff like that. I mean, our creature kind of begins to blur the line between it and its host, which was I thought was really interesting.
Yeah, right. I mean, based off of the creature and what it does, it's most certainly a parasite for sure.
Well, again, that's debatable.
Well, symbiote. Yeah, and that was part of what the scientists were trying to figure out in this movie, is whether it was a parasite or whether they were establishing a symbiotic relationship with it, which is slightly different.
Well, let me rephrase. Parasitic in the sense that the cosmonaut didn't want the creature with him, even if it became symbiotic with him. Right.
Well, I mean, maybe not at the beginning. I'm not sure that he felt the same way at the end of the movie that he did at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, I'm not sure either.
I'm thinking he still felt that way, but at that point he knew there was probably no hope. It's like, you know, when you get DNA switches, you know, you see these science fiction movies or books where the person has DNA changed. It's never going to change back, and so you just have to deal with it, and you either deal with it or you suicide or end it.
Uh-huh.
And I think this is what it was similar to that, where at that point he was like, all right, yeah, there's nothing I can do. It's stuck with me. The chance that they're going to find something. And then when you find out, and he already found out by that point that they wanted to use him and it as a weapon. So he was probably in the dumps, or a better term,
he was screwed.
He was a realist.
The point I was trying to make, though, is that the only reason he felt that way at the end of the movie is because in order for him to survive, they had to sacrifice other people. If that had not been the case, if this thing had just been living inside him and, you know, he could just eat sandwiches or whatever, I think he would have been fine with that. That's the point I was trying to make.
Well, I'm not even sure, because he didn't seem to feel too bad about killing and eating people. She would have ended up having to be sacrificed. I think he did it more to save her than anything else.
That's interesting. That wasn't my take.
Interesting.
Because he wasn't, right? He clearly did not seem bothered by it, and you know, and it's, you know, the thing with parasitism parasitism is technically a type of symbiosis, because somebody's benefiting from it. It's just that somebody else is being harmed by it. Where I think they're looking, again, getting nerdy on it, it's mutualistic, is where they both benefit. He's benefiting in that he's getting healed, right? He didn't die. Yeah. So that was his benefit.
He can heal three days.
Right.
But you know what, though? He probably wouldn't have been hurt in the first place if the creature didn't invade, right? I mean, they would have probably just
obviously
normal. So,
well,
right. So technically, you're right, Mike. He gets benefit because if he does get hurt, he heals. But that's after the fact. In other words, if the creature hadn't been there, his life would have been back to normal as it always was, and he would have been a hero of the CCCP.
Well, that's if the creature hadn't been present, but the relationship is what kept him alive. The creature there destroyed the ship and it crashed, and so, you know, or whatever, and that could have killed him.
It was the cause and effect.
Right. This would be more of like an obligatory symbiosis, right, where it's forcing him to be symbiotic. Doesn't mean he's not getting a benefit. Right. It doesn't mean he has to be all that happy about it either.
Right, right. So the question is, does the benefits outweigh the positives? I mean the negatives. And I would think almost everybody would say the benefits do not outweigh the negatives.
Right, because, like, if you woke up one morning and Bill Gates was stuck to your back, like, you could totally benefit because you've got access to his bank account, but there are going to be times where it's going to be a pain in the ass and you just want to get rid of him.
Wait, is he attached to your back or your ass?
It doesn't really matter. As long as you're stuck carrying him around wherever you go.
Right.
Well, his character is interesting anyway because he didn't seem to care about anything except being a hero. Like, he had let his kid go to the orphanage and, you know, It seemed like the most important thing was being the hero.
Well, that's true. He was definitely some sort of narcissist or something. But I think through the film, he was growing as a person because he started feeling bad about his kid and all these other things.
Right.
So, yeah.
That would have made him a better host is kind of where I'm going with that. Like, it found a good host because of his mindset.
Yeah. But there was also,
and that's what the lead actress character says too, which is,
yeah,
the creature chose him because he's perfect for
what it wants, which is rage and calm. You know, there's no like middle type. Are you gonna say
but
something?
There is that kind of.
I like extra, Phil.
I knew you were gonna say that. I knew someone was gonna say it. I didn't know
but
it was you.
There's an extra layer too. You know, in regards to the toy he carries around with him, because he feels guilt for his choice.
Yes, exactly.
And I thought that scene where the creature curls around the toy was actually a really nice scene. It added some really interesting dimensions between the relationship between him and the creature, and also how it kind of humanizes the creature in a slight way, because it shows how they kind of inherit parts of themselves from one another. You know?
Yeah.
It just adds a interesting layer of stage, just being another evil alien. It has some sort of growth in terms of its, and also adds to him, most importantly, because at a certain point, he pretty much breaks down in front of Tanya, pretty much feels that his situation, his punishment for abandoning his son for space.
Well, it makes you wonder what they would have become if they had had time to become more symbiotic.
Well, and this is kind of a good point to branch off into the part I wanted to talk to everybody about, because throughout, I think it's mostly in the second half of the movie, we get these flashes to a child in an orphanage.
Oh yeah.
And I think that we're meant to believe for the majority of the runtime of the movie that is his son that he abandoned.
Yeah, that was a 3-beat, by the way.
Okay. So,
that was a what?
It was a 3-beat.
Nobody cares.
Well, I'm saying because it happened twice, and that was, like, really weird, and then it shows up at the end. And, like, the first time was, like, seems to be, like, about halfway through the film, so it feels completely out of place to me.
Yeah.
But
Eric was wanting to finish his point.
I didn't understand why that was a hidden reveal. And I mean, clearly it's important to the guy whoever wrote this movie, because it's set up by the fact that we see our main character in the shower and she's got a massive scar going on her spine, right? So it's set up. It's clearly intentional. It's clearly important to whoever wrote this story, but I still don't understand why. Because let me finish up, Phil. At the end of the movie, we see that she has taken in his orphaned son. And I guess that maybe she is more likely to do that since she was an orphan herself. And maybe that's the connection. But there seemed to have been a lot of screen time dedicated to that for that moment. And I thought that was a little weird. Okay, Phil, what are you going to ask me?
Yeah, I was just going to ask. So that, her back, we get to see her naked in the shower. That scar, that was a scar. I wasn't sure if that was just her back bending, and you know, like the shoulder blades, or if it was just water rolling or soap rolling down her back. So that was actually a scar.
That was a scar. I knew somebody who had scoliosis surgery, and they had a scar very similar to that down their back. So yeah, that was a clue. I completely forgot about that. So thank you for bringing that back up, Eric. I think, look, what they were, and I did read something, and it was kind of what I, with the director, and he explained it. I don't think he justified it, and the explanation is kind of what I figured, just to show why this woman is the kind of woman that she is, you know, that she said that what she had to overcome to become who she is, and you know, why she's so strong and determined. It's like, yeah, but you didn't have to do that with that head fake on the audience at the very end of the film.
Right.
It was like a Shyamalan ending.
Sorry, Mike. I was just going to say, I don't understand why it's a hidden reveal, because if that's what you're trying to show, we only get the reveal like in the last 2 minutes of the film, so you really don't get to understand that about the character until the movie's over.
Yeah.
Right, it's a head fake. It's a bad head fake.
Yeah.
It doesn't do any good whatsoever. But, and has left a lot of people confused about the ending.
Do you even really need it because can a character just be strong? Can a character just be strong?
They could have extended with her getting the kid from the orphanage.
Exactly.
They didn't need the other two pieces.
Because honestly,
subplot. I was just going to say, you could take that whole subplot out of the movie completely, and all it does is reduce the runtime a little bit. It has no ultimate effect on the story.
I mean, because it kind of breaks up the pace of the film, too. You know, you're getting into this whole situation, and suddenly you jump into this kid, keep trying to get to this box, and get scolded, and then it's back to the main story, and it's just, it really doesn't need it. It doesn't. And it really doesn't,
It's distracting.
It didn't even matter. I didn't even think it mattered. We didn't even find out she was an orphan until later anyway. And I don't even think it was necessary. I mean, the only reason it was there was to have empathy for the orphan or something. I don't know. You're going to say something?
Yeah, I think we're all on the same page here.
First of all, I think the placement of the scenes were weird, right? Because they're just totally odd. And how they're placed in the movie, the timing of them. They don't add anything to it. They have told you so much of this in this film through exposition. If they really wanted you to know this bit about the character's background, they could have worked it in any place else in the first hour and a half of the film. I agree with Phil. Right. It doesn't really matter. It's nice to know, like, maybe who the character's backgrounds are, but it's not a thing where her inner life is really so important to the story.
We already know she has all these problems with her job, and that was enough drama.
Right.
You know?
and then when you get to the ending, it's like, now, is this a thing that you could do in the Soviet Union? That a person who is probably a fugitive from justice can just walk up to the orphanage and say, hey, I'd like to make a withdrawal?
Yeah, that's another thing that was questionable, but I decided not to spend any time.
I don't know if she's a fugitive at that point. She might not be.
No idea, but she did kind of have a hand in the deaths of about a dozen or so Soviet soldiers.
Yeah. Well, only because she was brought in under false pretenses, and really, I think the blame lies with the colonel guy or whoever the hell he was.
Yeah, and we all know how forgiving those Soviet scientists and government people are going to be, rather than we understand that you allowed an alien creature that we could have used as a bioweapon to commit suicide and murder people.
Yeah,
I mean,
well,
they know she was
yeah.
there. They got paperwork for her, right? So they had to know she was there.
No, but
we know that.
Guy,
yeah,
was
I mean, no,
the, whole... the colonel guy was lying to Moscow the entire time.
That's true, but she also was irresponsible because we don't know what this creature can do outside of a lockdown situation. So for her to want to bring him out was absolutely ridiculous.
I'm not disagreeing, but I'm saying there's nobody who knows that. Everybody who knows that is dead.
Yeah, they've all been killed.
But he's still, unless I'm mistaken, she still needed the paperwork to go to the facility where everybody is dead now. I would think that someone's going to be wanting to talk to her.
Oh, yeah.
True.
But they also don't give us any handy little caption like 6 months later.
Right.
Because, yeah, that could have happened, and it was just unclear.
Right. And so that was, and so that was a messy little... The little denouement at the end there. It's also, you had this, I don't like that you're serial rapists. That's terrible. So I'm going to release you and let you just kill all the soldiers around here because I love you. I was just like, that also kind of felt like a weird character inconsistency for me in that second half.
I'm sorry, did you say serial rapist?
The people that they were, like, feeding, right? So the prisoners?
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
I thought you were talking about the cosmonaut. I was like, did I miss something?
No. No, so she's
the
so
food.
Offended, right?
The food.
She's so offended at them using the worst, by what they claim to be the dregs of humanity. We don't know. We are taking him at his word for it. But she has no reason to doubt it, as far as we know. To feed the absolutely worst human beings to this alien creature. And she's so offended by it, she then decides to go out and release this creature on a killing spree. And that just feels...
Right.
Weird.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a little hypocritical.
Right.
They weren't, because they weren't feeding orphans to it.
No.
Right. Right. Well, even if it was prisoners and they were bad people, you know, we're taking the word from the commander that they were bad people. It would make me, it wouldn't matter because the creature seemed indifferent to whether, you know, because it ate her. It would have, it ate another doctor. It ate fellow cosmonaut. So the creature loose in the world could eat children itself. So for her to see, not see the difference between, did she see the difference between criminals and, I don't know. It just was kind of bizarre.
Well, and I'm just saying, I don't know if that thing can propagate, you know, more of itself. Right.
That's true. Hey, they have no idea if it could make more, reproduce. It couldn't imagine if it had diseases or anything.
Yeah, this is no Ripley refusing to let Tom Skerritt back onto the ship.
No.
Right? I'm just saying it just seems really inconsistent. I have no problem with her being upset that they're feeding the prisoners to the creature. I have no problem. It's just that, you know, it's that I really, you know, this, I'm going to protect humanity until it's inconvenient for me thing. That I think.
And why would you... Well, to be fair, she did get shot and she was probably kind of pissed.
Right. Oh yeah. But she got shot because it was already after the fact that she had determined to do what she wanted to do, though, right?
And she was going to be bringing this thing out into the real world.
Her original plan was not to release the alien so it could kill a bunch of people. Her original plan was to try and get him out of there so she could figure out how to separate
the two,
from the alien.
And that it would die because it didn't have a person to go back into.
Right, right.
Yeah, the problem is they already...
I'll give her credit. One thing I'll give her credit for was she didn't agree with using the alien as a military weapon, right? Because that alone is dangerous. So that's good. But the question is, then she should have just killed the cosmonaut, even if she liked the guy. It's like, there's nothing we can do. We got to take him out because he could infect the world.
She thought that she would be able to find a way to separate the two.
Yeah, so she's an idealist.
That may have been foolish or idealist or whatever, but that was her intention.
And then she did realize she was wrong.
And then eventually, she did, but it was too late at that point. And by the way, worst escape attempt ever.
Oh, Lord, why did she stop the fucking car?
Well, that too. But
you gotta go, you gotta go.
Like, she didn't even make it out of the fucking building before they were like, what's she doing? Go get her.
Well, you would think the whole thing about them knowing feeding would let them know, would have told her that they've always got eyes on her. There's issue number one. Number two, they already established that the guy is not going to survive when the creature's outside of him. Right? So,
yeah, but you don't understand, Mike. She is a great scientist. She'll be able to figure it out.
She's not a scientist. She's a psychologist. Come on.
She wants to believe she can figure it out. You're just like completely ignoring that facet of things. And
I'm just saying the character I was working was really smart and clever for the first hour or so of the film. And then once...
Right.
Then she starts becoming...
Then she became wackadoodle.
Less so.
Wackadoodle, yeah.
I said she started getting the hots for this guy, and love kind of messed her up or something. I can't fit. Why else would she have done the ridiculous thing she did?
Try and save a man with a being in it
that we don't know if it could propagate and kill the rest of the world. So. If she didn't agree with the military use of the aliens and the cosmonaut, I think she only had two solutions that make sense. One is she kills the cosmonaut because there's just no time for her to find a solution to separate the creature from him, because again, you know, that's going to take, it could take a year, it could take 2 years, you don't know. And then the other option is what she did, and that was insane because it was irresponsible, I felt.
So you think if there's a situation where you could possibly save somebody, but you're not sure, you should just murder them?
No, it's like if you have someone that is contagious, and you're not, I'm not going to take them out. That's correct. I'm not going to have them leave the building. So the only other thing is, if I leave him though, he's going to be used as a weapon to kill other people. So what option do you have? You're not going to take him out because you don't want to send a contagion out into the world. So, and you don't want the military to use him because they're going to use him to kill everybody. So, yeah, the only solution is to kill him. Absolutely, Eric. That's I would agree. Yes.
Okay. Phil's pro murder.
In this situation. Or I do nothing. Right?
Wait, you're getting a little gray here, Phil. Usually you're black and white. There's a little gray going on here.
It's math. It's math. It's math. It's either this thing is going to get out and eat people, or this guy's or he's going to die. One of the two. One death or a death a day.
Right. Exactly. And that's the thing. So, and it could be even worse, because if they do militarize him, then he could wipe out, you know, all of Lithuania tomorrow, you know, during World War III or something. So it's like, what do you do? So obviously the best solution, Eric, if she didn't have a nefarious colonel that wanted to use him as a military weapon, they would continue to do medical experiments to try to break the symbiosis. And that's that. But unfortunately, we don't have that. We have evil people. So it's like, what do you do?
I just give you a hard time. I'm just trying to make the point that her initial instinct to try and save the dude isn't out of line. That's all I'm trying to say.
Yeah, that's true. It's a humanist and a religious line where human life is important no matter what situation.
Exactly.
So the question is, she should have not been as rash, but I think she was in a panic mode because of what she was finding out about the people at the base, which is,
well, and she wasn't sure what she was going to find out next, because so much was withheld from her.
That's true.
You know, what was going to be the next thing to drop that was going to be bad?
She was also running out of time, because I think Moscow had gotten wind of the fact that this colonel dude is full of shit. And was
right, because we don't get court martials. Right.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah, so this colonel was a bozo, because it's like, what was he hoping? Oh, that's right. He was hoping that he could turn it into a weapon and then he would be rewarded.
Yep.
But
yeah,
because if he told the Moscow,
exactly,
he destroyed it or taken it from him.
Right, because he was hoping that his success would outweigh any of his crimes.
Well, and to be honest, he was starting to see some success, because she was able to kind of help control it when it was in the pen. So he was hopeful that he could utilize her and it and the astronaut to kind of forge a weapon.
Yeah, you're not wrong. However, the way she was able to control it was to calm it down.
Whereas
its natural state seemed to be very aggressive. So I don't think that's exactly what he was looking for.
Yeah, that's true too.
Maybe the alien liked jazz more.
Maybe.
I don't know. Maybe. All I know is that the woman was trying to tame the man's giant worm. That's...
That was bad.
Oh, fuck right up. That was bad. All right, so let's see. What do we want to talk about next?
Can we talk a bit about the creature itself?
Yeah. Oh yeah,
yeah, so,
sure.
I did like the creature design. I actually like the original design for the creature. It morphs as and evolves or develops really as the film goes on. It does when you scrutinize it, it is made up of bits and pieces of more familiar critters, and there are elements of theirs, but
there's some cobra in there.
There's cobra, spider. Not only snake. The snake, there's
lamprey,
right? Even the eyes, like the eyes are clearly spider eyes, and even the muzzle kind of reminds me of the chelicerae, the fangs in the front of a spider's face, even though they weren't fangs, just the coloration added to that look. It had two walking arms. It kind of reminded me of the Cloverfield monster.
Yes, I felt that too.
Which is very bat-like. When bats, walk on their front, when bats walk on all four legs, if you remove the skin flaps, it kind of looks like that. But when it first, and it has those two little, like, wiggly
kind of like
arms.
A gorilla, too, Mike.
It has those two little arms in the chest. That seems to be a thing ever since the Alien Queen in Aliens. And I've seen that a number of places, and there is no, and then it just is like sort of a wormy, slug-like back, and then as the film progresses, it becomes more quadrupedal with a tail. It goes from like tadpole to more, and becomes, I think, a little bit more conventional. But I still thought it was a neat design. I liked the look of it. I liked that it didn't get too big. Although our Russian general or colonel or whatever he was, points out that we have no idea if this is full size or it's gonna, massively
right. Another reason why you don't let it leave the base.
Yeah.
One thing I also liked is how they explain how the creature, lives within the cosmonauts. Explain how it causes the stomach area and the esophagus to expand a little bit, and it has a certain period of time where it'll merge and return.
And also, it's much smaller. It's only inside him. It's only 30 centimeters.
Right.
And then once he takes it out, it expands to three times its original size.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, Mike, what did you think of how it did that? Because, I always think of films like this where something can shrink and expand at will, just for convenience. And I don't know if it's ever, like, that's why Alien was such a great film, was because once it expands, it blows out of you and it never shrinks again, right? Here, you have a creature that it's almost like magical, where it can shrink to fit back, in the size of a fist, and yet when it's outside, it's bigger than as big as a man.
Well, I mean, guys, we should all be familiar with certain things that can shrink and expand. I mean, this wasn't ridiculous. This wasn't this was something that was going from like being 30 centimeters, which is about a foot, to a creature that was, about 3 feet long, at least when we first run into it.
At
least.
And it seemed fairly soft bodied at first.
It didn't seem much of a skeleton.
Right. There are things like you look at an octopus. Is very, very flexible. And then, how does it inflate itself? Does it, is it using air to sort of puff itself up? Or is it like absorbing or removing fluids from his body, to inflate and deflate as it exits and leaves? I really don't know. I mean, we saw the slime it was leaving behind. So it's not like it was going from, a foot long, that he had to swallow the foot long, and then it would get, to 10 feet tall. It's never got huge, right? It never got bigger than a decent sized dog, which at that point I'm thinking he might have had a little something in his throat. But I think it worked. I think it was fine. Let's put it this way. I've seen much worse creature designs and less plausible monsters over the years.
Yeah, all right, that's fair.
I also really like the way it moved. I also really like the way it moved around. How it kind of whipped. It was just this really fast, almost really agile. Just like when it fights the squad that's trying to apprehend them, and it's whipping between the trucks and everything like that. I thought the movie was very fluid.
It's like turkeys.
they you know, they just walk slow, looking around, whatever. And then when they see danger, they zip like a friggin' cheetah. And this kind of turkey kind of was like that.
Like a cheetah. That.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Do those turkeys Phil, do these turkeys also climb into people's throats?
When they're hungry. And when they're horny.
I guess. But you know, so,
oh!
the creature kind of just waddled around, but when it saw when it attacked its creature, it was wicked fast. So it was kind of like that. It was kind of Eric. What did you think of how it grew and shrunk? Did that bother you, or did you think that was cool?
No,
or what?
It's a sci-fi movie. It's fine.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. What about when we find out that he was faking it? The cosmonaut was faking it the entire time, and he knew all about the creature the entire time. What did you guys think of that?
I thought he was pretty
interesting.
Clever.
Yeah, I thought that was a good reveal.
It was a better reveal than the damn orphan thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. That, absolutely. Now,
what about the thing being in space and opening up the capsule? I'm still not sure about that.
Yeah. But I'll allow it.
An unanswered question is not a plot hole. It is an unanswered question.
Yeah, yeah. Good point.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you were just asking opinion, right?
I mean, it's a thought. I mean, look, the whole idea that there's a thing out there in space that just is there in Earth's orbit, yeah, I mean, this whole thing is kind of silly. But, you know, you either buy the premise or you don't. We've talked about this before in the past on the podcast. People coming to watch this movie are probably open to the idea of it being a sci-fi monster movie from space. And once you take that, then you can argue the plausibility. But if you're arguing the plausibility of a sci-fi monster from space in a movie that's a sci-fi monster from space movie, then maybe you shouldn't have picked that movie to watch, right?
Right.
Seems fair.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So, what about the scientist that was kind of on board at first, and then he kind of switches over to, I guess, for no better term, the good side?
I was kind of surprised.
Well, you know what? I was kind of too, but
well,
again, this is the Soviet Union, right? Where? Yeah, go on, Eric.
I was just going to say, having watched the movie twice now, I don't think it was that big of a flip. I think he was just trying to measure her and make sure that she was in the same place that he was. Because I really think he had a problem with it the whole time. He just knew better than to say anything.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Right, that's what I was going to say. That's what I was going to say. Being in the Soviet Union or a communist country, dictator, whatever you want to call it, he was a smart guy. And when you become tagged by the government as someone of importance or usefulness, I should say, they have you do things that, you know, they have you do things you don't necessarily want to do. And if you speak up, you're in trouble and you go to the gulags or they threaten your family or who knows what else. So I think you're right, Eric. I think he was there more for reasons that were because he couldn't make a choice otherwise. And for her, when she said, oh, you just want the Nobel Prize or whatever it was, I think he didn't answer because, again, he's just scared to hell. He's just worried everybody's an agent, and that if he says, yeah, you're right, I don't want the Nobel Prize, or I do want to, who knows what that will mean to
right.
his life, in a sense, because in that situation, it's his life. It's not just like some farmer that no one cares about. It's an important scientist. What about you, Mike? What did you think of the flip? You haven't mentioned it. Everybody else agrees.
I don't know. I don't know that I felt it was completely earned. But again, I'm more willing to, for once, accept Eric's word on this since he has watched it twice now. and I may have missed some nuance in his performance. I just knew that I was told repeatedly he just wants to win the Nobel Prize, but I'm also willing to accept that could have been her projection and her making assumptions. You know, he definitely was, you know, I was thinking about it, like he was ill watching the guy get eaten by the thing. We need a new name for it because the thing's already taken.
Sput.
Yes, for Sput. Yes. So, right. So clearly,
let's call it Space Spider Cobra.
Space Spider Cobra. Right. So he was clearly disturbed by the Space Spider Cobra eating people. And so that's good. You know, so maybe he wasn't as bad as we thought, as, you know, maybe he was all along.
He had his limits.
Yeah, so I think I'd be willing, you know, yeah, 'cause the fact that he took her out on the tour and he showed it to her. Yeah, maybe, I guess I could see it. I was a little, the idea that, 'cause he flipped the two characters around the same time, right? The colonel and the doctor. And it felt like felt more forced to me. But I guess in hindsight, he doesn't feel as forced as the kind of the colonel did, or as cheap as the colonel did.
Yeah, no, I see where you're coming at, Mike, because even though everything that we discussed in Eric's point, my point, Barrett and Abe would all agree that, you know, we can buy it, it did still feel a little B-movie silliness too. You know, the evil scientist or the scientist that cooperates with the bad villains, and then at the last second he becomes a good guy and helps out our hero, you know. So
redemption equals death as well.
Yeah, exactly. Redemption equals death, right? Because why didn't he leave? Why did he stay? You know, he didn't have to stay, but he says, "I'm going to stay. I'm going to be a hero," and you know, so, or maybe he just was a defeatist at that point. But again, it's what you said, Abe.
He called Moscow.
He did.
Yeah.
He had a plan. He had a plan, right? Because the colonel or the general or whomever had already pointed out that he was going to be in deep shit if Moscow ever figured out what he was up to. And he just didn't like get the timing right.
Yeah.
Well, plus went so horribly, horribly wrong instantly. I think maybe he was expecting the escape attempt to distract a little longer than it did.
Yeah, I think so too.
Because they're like, oh yeah, there they are, kiddo. It was kind of funny actually how quickly they got caught.
Yeah, and that table doesn't block the door very well.
No. Well-trained Soviet infantry can't possibly make their way past a table in front of a door.
I was watching that movie with my friends Dan and Susie, and when he put that table against the door, I was like, I don't know how much good that's going to do.
None.
Right. Yeah.
Survey says no one. Yeah. Nothing.
Yeah. Let's see. What else did we want to bring up about the movie? Specific scenes. I thought it was a little odd. They agreed to and allowed him to have access during the day with the special room and walking around in the halls and stuff. Because even though it was a good point that she made why it should be set up, I still think it should have been a locked area, because even though they've had him there for a few months and the creature never came out during the day, what happens if it just suddenly changes and says, all right, I'm coming out during the day? And
well, he had obviously been out before because he showed her where all that stuff was.
And there was a hand-wavy line of it's weaker during the day or something to that effect. Which is, again, a little weird for a creature from space, but whatever.
Well, we do see it. That is a thing. They do see, like, at the beginning of the film, they chase it back by using flashy lights. Right. Yeah. So they know that it's affected by light somehow. But again, I'm with Phil. This thing is clearly changing. It didn't used to have four legs. Now it has four legs. So it's changing, it's evolving, and the whole point is it's adapting. You're facilitating the survival of a creature that, you know, as dangerous as it is and could be getting more dangerouser as it adapts. Now, it could have also been adapting into something marvelous.
That's what they want, Mike. That they want it to be dangerous.
So no, they want it to be dangerous, and she wants to get it, and she's, you know, looking at getting it loose. I know that's not what her intent was, but I'm going to stab it with this thing to simulate this disease, and it's going to run away and die, and my boyfriend will be all fine, despite the fact that the doctor said that he needs it and him to be alive. So, I'm just saying, I just think her plan
and she was wrong about that, and she says so in the movie.
Yeah, it was a bit shit. That's just what I'm saying. As a plan.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know. I had way less of a problem with what you guys are referring to, the B-moviness of this. I thought it was fine.
Well, it's not that. It's that I enjoyed the first half. I thought it was so much better and smarter. And then it stepped into the B-moviness. Like, remember the movie Life?
Yeah.
All right. That was kind of B-movie from beginning to end.
Right.
And so it was what it was and wasn't anything else. And it didn't, like, kind of, it's up here, and then it's,
Right.
It's like
what Mike is trying to...
I was going to say, it's like getting a four-star restaurant appetizer and then a quarter pounder for your main meal.
No, a quarter pounder tastes good. So I guess
the beginning of the movie wasn't A level to begin with, so I didn't feel it was that much of a drop. I thought the whole thing was good, but not great.
Gotcha. See, I'm kind of more where Mike is. I like the first hour. Or hour and 30 minutes, as you said, Eric, was really, really good. I was like, this is a great, great film. And then when it turned into it was a B movie from the beginning, because just for the fact that you have a monster, that makes it generally a B movie. But as we've seen with a lot of B movies or monster movies, they can become Academy Award winners, like Shape of Water. So This was kind of really an intelligent, interesting movie. And then when the monster comes, it has some really horrific elements and all this. And then when it starts getting into the humanity and the odd behavior of the actions of the lead characters, it kind of turned into, as Mike would say, Mike has been saying, B-movie. And not as strong, I think. And then they throw the orphan thing in and stuff. So if they had stuck the same, I guess it's tonal, Eric. So what Mike may be even saying is it's tonal. The first hour and 15 minutes tone compared to the second part of the film is completely different.
But isn't that normal? Isn't that how a lot of movies go? You start out with a slow part where you get the character development and the dialogue and the exposition, and then you ramp up to the action scenes. That doesn't.
It's not the slowness. I think it was. It seemed like it was a smarter film early on. Yeah. You know, where she's doing things like talking about, where she seems to be is smart in terms of doing things like the talking, getting agitating him in the conversation about, you know, is he really a hero? Or pushing him on the issue of his son. And there's some interesting dialogue, and there's some intelligent conversation there. And I think they set her up to be a much smarter character to then kind of devolve into the
emotional person.
The emotional, I love this man, so I'm going to do a thing that's completely irrational and makes no sense. Even though they at least admit that the plan maybe was a shit plan. By the end, it just didn't feel like it just didn't quite feel right for the character.
Okay.
Yeah, and I would concur with that. Because after go on, Eric.
I was just going to say I clearly didn't feel that, and you guys did, but
yeah, I didn't feel that either.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's just perspective, I guess. Go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just
I mean, overall, I still think it was still enjoyable film. There was, you know, aside from the maybe confusing parts of the orphan and stuff like that, I still kept myself very engaged just to see what would happen next. I mean, there were familiar beats I've seen in other movies, but I kept thinking that, you know, certain surprises might be around the corner. So, I mean,
I guess my big issue I'm having with this conversation is that you guys are using the phrase B movie as pejorative when we all love B movies. So what's the
point? Oh yeah. They're so much fun.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean, Eric. Yeah. So I know that. I mean, we're using that term, but I mean, obviously we're trying to mean something else than just straight B movie. I guess I don't know what the term would be. What would be a better term, Mike? But because I know what you're talking about, Mike.
I understand what you guys are saying. I guess it's just that term is rubbing me the wrong way. It's not a huge deal. It's just a difference of opinion.
I mean, well, and I understand what you guys are saying about the characters. It just seemed a little it wasn't quite as dramatic, I think, to me as it was for you guys. Their changes.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, well, some of my favorite films are B movies, you know.
Yeah, but again, it's a semantic thing. When we say, I mean, Life is a B movie, and that was a fun movie. Well, I think what Mike is trying to say is that this film here was Hollywood award-winning material the first hour or so, and then
I guess
it turned into just a regular summer film.
I guess what I don't understand is that, like, this movie, for the most part, except for the orphan shit, went where I was expecting it to go. And I guess if that's not where you guys were expecting that to go, I'd be interested to know where you were expecting it to go.
I was expecting the lead actress character to determine when she found out that he was being used as a weapon to try to convince him to kill himself. Or something. Or he would have gone psycho and says, they're going to do this to me. And then he goes crazy and he starts just destroying the base or something. I just didn't think her rationale is saying, all right, I got to rescue you from the military, even though the creature inside you could be dangerous and kill everybody. And I thought it would have went more in the way of we just recently saw Eric, The Forbidden Planet, and be more smart than.
I kind of felt like it fit in with her character because she would go to extreme measures, and putting that into him to cause the creature to come out was kind of an extreme measure. It just didn't work.
Right, but to leave the base with the,
well, it actually worked. It just worked in the context of a shitty plan.
Right. Well, because they were already so close that they couldn't be separated permanently was the part that she didn't know about.
And well, and also to actually to feel that she was going to able to separate them when she's not a true medical doctor, never mind where are they going to go, never mind how long is it going to take, never mind.
She might have been a psychiatrist, which means she would have had medical degree.
It doesn't matter the point in reality, because what I'm saying is that she's not trained. Put it this way, coronavirus.
She's not trained
That's right. Exactly. Like coronavirus, they're saying it could. We may have a vaccine 3 months, but it may take 3 years before we can take the mask off. So if coronavirus is that hard to figure out, and AIDS you can't even figure out, and on and on, hepatitis you can't, you go on. This is an alien being with some sort of.
Well, that's where she's blind for sure, because they don't even know enough about it at all.
Wait a minute. Was this set after E.T. came out? Because maybe saw E.T. and saw the scene where their vital signs were the same, and then they separated, and that's why she thought she could separate them.
It took place in 83. When did E.T. come out?
Sputnik, phone home.
That was 81 or 82, like I think.
Or was it? No, yeah, no. It was 82, because it was the same summer as The Thing. Yeah, that's your answer. She saw
same year as Poltergeist.
That's the answer.
Yeah, because this took place in 83 and E.T. came out.
All right, that was a funny joke. Let's move on.
Fun on this podcast.
Sorry.
We're super serial.
All right, so I don't know. It's just hard to believe that someone that is educated that amount would actually think they could separate a creature. Well,
that's the point of all these types of movies, right?
well, you get all these scientists in this Kazakhstan military base that can't do it in 6 months. How does she think she can do it herself? I don't know. It's just a flaw in the film, I thought.
Well, the colonel thought she was capable of doing it,
right? Yeah, but that, I don't think he thought you were going to do it next week.
Well, there was a time limit because he knew that they were going to be coming, right?
Yeah, right. That's true. Yeah, I think that's the reason why they had the time limit, because otherwise there was, there would be no suspense because they could just sit there for 10 years trying to do it.
At one point I thought that the alien and him would switch places in a way.
Yeah, I thought it was going to get into the colonel at one point.
That could have been possible too.
Yeah, because it never
that
explained.
That actually would have been really cool if he just like puked up the alien into the colonel's mouth. That would have been sweet.
Well, I thought it was going to go into his mouth right after it bit his hand off or whatever.
Oh yeah,
because he's sitting there and they're looking at each other and.
Yeah, but that would have just made it even more cliche, I would think.
I agree with you. Yeah.
It was a pretty badass scene with him, taking on the alien by himself though.
Right.
Just going in there and just tricking the alien with the smoke bomb and then... But he actually realistically... Go ahead.
I was just going to say, how cool was it when the alien took him out, though? That was pretty awesome.
Oh, yeah, it was awesome.
That was the best scene.
That was the alien took some notes from Mortal Kombat right there.
Yeah, the kill move from Dead or Alive.
Finish him!
Yeah, so let's see. What else did we want to bring up?
I'm good.
So am I, honestly.
Yeah, me too. I think
we've be honest.
Talked about everything.
Yeah, absolutely. But before we do final thoughts, let's discuss things that we may have seen and stuff. Eric, I know you saw some TV show on Hulu.
Yes, I did. I watched, I think it's labeled as season one of Monsterland. And I had a reaction to it I was not expecting, was that it really kind of hit me on a deep level. It's really well done, and they have some really great actors in it. And as the name would indicate, there's definitely some supernatural aspects to a lot of the episodes. But at the same time, it deals with some really, really dark human shit, like child abuse and suicide. So if you're sensitive to any of those topics, be aware of that if you go to watch it, because it might trigger. And for me, honestly, a couple of the episodes left me feeling pretty icky, just because of how dark they went. But I think that was their intention, and they succeeded. So as far as the quality of the show, I give it a high rating. At the same time, it is pretty dark stuff and might not be for everybody.
Right. Okay. All right. And how many episodes was it?
8, I think.
Gotcha. Yeah, a lot of shows around 8 nowadays. Yeah. Anything else that you wanted to bring up that you have seen recently? Or whatever?
Let me check my letterbox diary. What we got here? Oh, I watched a movie called Alone at Phil's recommendation. which I enjoyed a great deal, and I think we're probably going to talk more about it at a later date.
Yep.
And I also watched a movie at Mr. Watson's recommendation called Ravage, which was good, but I didn't particularly care for the ending, so it kind of ended on a wah-wah. But it was 85% of a good movie.
And where did you see that one? Is that a VOD rental, or is that just anywhere?
Yeah, it's a VOD rental.
Gotcha. All right. Anything else, Eric?
That's it for this week.
All right. Very well. For me, I actually watched a film with my wife. She didn't want to watch it, but I finally convinced her just for the heck of it. It was on Shudder. It was called Spiral. It was okay.
Is that any good?
Yeah, it was okay. I mean, it wasn't great. They should have ended it like 15 minutes before the actual ending. It would have been a cooler film, but it was okay. There's a lot of message in it about because one of the two lead characters are a gay couple, two men, and they have a daughter. One of them has custody of his daughter, and so she lives with them too. And it's really a lot about how one of the two gay men is paranoid about people around him due to because it's a period piece, you know, like 1990 or something that takes place. And he's thinking people are, you know, bigots against him. And that was kind of interesting. And that was the interesting thing was, is he imagining that there's bigots around, or is he right? And unfortunately, they went to the...
Could be both.
It could be both. And unfortunately, I felt it would have been better if it went one way than another. And if they had stopped it 15 minutes earlier when it appeared to be one way. Yeah, yeah. So it's a decent watch. Nothing great. It's made by Canadians that pretend that it's an American film. Because it's supposed to take place in the U.S., but it's... completely produced and whatnot, acted and all that in Canada, but obviously they were trying to get an American audience.
Goddamn Canadians!
Well, to be fair, a lot of American filmmakers film in Canada too. Vancouver is very popular in Toronto.
Yeah, Toronto and Vancouver are huge. This one was actually filmed all in Alberta, I think it was. Yeah, so Alberta because it's a stunning town, because you have this town in the middle of nowhere. And then there's all this like this lake or swamp that's you see in the distance, and so it looked like it kind of could have been like New England or upstate New York or even Missouri or something. So I looked it up, and then you find out that the whole thing's Canadian. So I won't be visiting that town; it's too far away. I watched that, and then that's pretty much it. Besides this film here, Sputnik, I did have two films I watched for my 31 days of horror challenge, but I doubt I'm even going to get 10. But I'll talk about those later, probably on the Facebook page. What about you, Abe? You got anything?
Aside from Sputnik, I tried out a chapter of a visual novel that is in the works on a Kickstarter, which is titled Scarlet Hollow. It is usually visual novels, which are, as the name describes, are stories that are told from a visual kind of graphical way, an approach. This is a horror-themed one where you play as a character revisiting a part of the family that you had not seen for all your life. And you begin to find out strange and supernatural things start to happen in this town. This is also a story that is very focused on choices and character relationships. The way you approach certain decisions and actions will have consequences that will follow you as the story goes along. The first chapter is actually free on Steam and some other sites here and there. The creators of the game have provided them
You can actually find their page here on Facebook called, under Black Tabby Games. As I said, the first chapter is free, so you can try it out and see if you're interested in continuing it and maybe even supporting the fine folks on Kickstarter. They're trying to, they've already reached their goal in one day. But any help, extra help would make the process of building the game much easier. Basically, they're releasing chapters yearly. They put a lot of hard work into it. I haven't played it myself, and it's a fun experience. And I'm really thinking it needs a little more love. And if folks are interested in checking out a little horror game of this kind, it's there. And as I said, the title is Scarlet Hollow. If you want to be more specific in what you're looking for, and other than that, not much aside from this and Sputnik.
All right, very good. What about you, Barrett?
So there was a show called Primeval that came out in the late 2000s that my wife and I had watched the first two seasons of, and then at that point hadn't been able to see the rest of it. And that appeared, we noticed that on the streaming services and watched that, binge watched it to the end this weekend. And it's a show about anomalies that dinosaurs come through. It's an interesting British show, kind of fun. And then I also watched.
Oh, I watched that.
Yeah, it's
that's ringing a bell, but I don't remember details.
Yeah, it's a fun show. It's on Hulu.
Yeah, I think I remember a couple episodes of that. Primeval. Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty fun. The end of the final season. I'm not sure they knew it was going to be the end, so it's kind of okay. And then the other thing I've been watching is A Discovery of Witches, which I just finished recently, and that was really, really good show.
So you finished? She's a witch.
Yes, I finished. Oh, and yeah, it was great.
Yeah, that's a great show. Great show. Yeah, that's on Shudder for folks who want to watch it. It's a UK production that Shudder got the rights to season one, and season two is been already filmed, and it's coming out Q1 of next year, and it's already been greenlit for season three too. It stars Teresa Palmer and is it Andrew Good Barrett?
I think of his name, but
it's good. His last name's Good. I forget his first name. He was a Downton Abbey actor, and he was in Stoker.
Yep.
He
was in Watchmen.
His first
too.
Name Johnny B.
Johnny B.
No.
Bum, bum.
He's in Watchmen as well. He plays Adrian.
Right.
Adrian!
Yeah, really, he played really well Osmodeus, didn't he? Or something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything else you want to bring up?
No, that's pretty much it. That's what I've been spending my time watching the last week.
All right. Sounds good. What about you, Mike?
Honestly, really not much. So you can just pass.
Yeah, I know what you mean. All right, so that's pretty much about that. Any news anybody want to bring up? Mike, you usually have some things you always like popping up, but if you don't, no worries, we can move on. Anything?
Nope.
Okay. All right, so I guess we can give our final thoughts. But before we do, Eric, you actually do another podcast with your buddy Dan?
I do. It's a general interest podcast called the Askansity Podcast. That's spelled Askansity. You can find it wherever you got this one.
Excellent. And Mike, me, you, and Eric do another podcast?
Yes, that one's called Cinema a la Carte, where we pick a film that otherwise might not be appropriate to cover on Dark Discussions. And we pick one of those a month and discuss it. We rotate. The last person to pick was, I believe it was Eric, and we did Jack Reacher. Before that, it was Phil, and we had discussed Collateral. And then it's my turn, and I am not going to conclude us with a Tom Cruise trilogy. So you'll just have to tune in and see what it is that we do.
Yeah, very well. And
Mike, just so you know, I bought your choice on 4K.
Cool. Oh, by the way, did you,
oh,
Yeah, that was it. Yeah, that's okay. Yeah. Oh, by the way, did you see Tremors is coming out on 4K, also an Arrow box?
Yeah.
Oh, and Pitch Black came out on 4K, and I know you got that too, Mike, yep. Right? Yeah. And Mike, how was the Gamera set? I know you got that.
I got it. I haven't even started to play with it yet. It's a beautiful set. It's a beautiful, beautiful set. I actually just got the Friday the 5th set in today.
I just ordered that. I'm getting mine from Amazon.
The Scream Factory one, Mike?
Yes. Yeah.
Nice. And is that beautiful too? Did you check that
one? I have not even opened it up yet.
Gotcha.
I had to come home and start watching Sputnik right away.
Gotcha.
That looks like I'm not a huge enough fan of the Friday the 13th series to lay out the cash for that one, but it looks like if you are a fan of that series, it looks like the ultimate box set for fans of the Friday the 13th.
Yeah, yeah. But I don't think it has that 4-hour documentary or not. I forget if it does, but it's loaded with unbelievable stuff. So I spent the money and ordered it, so mine is coming in through Amazon. Well, Mike, you got yours right from Screen Factory, obviously, because you got it earlier than everybody else.
Is that the $129.99 one on Amazon, Phil?
Yeah, that's the one, okay. Yeah.
Probably. Yeah. There's one that's also more expensive that was limited edition that had a bunch of, like, a lithograph and some collector stuff.
Yeah, but I think that one was only on from Screen Factory itself, though. You couldn't buy that through Amazon.
Yeah, it was also a limited number.
Yeah. Mike, did you get that one, the limited number one? Or?
Yeah, I ordered it like as soon as it came up.
You got the – yeah. I'm only getting the 129 version that doesn't have the –
But, Phil, you haven't watched a lot of those movies, have you?
No, so this will be perfect for me.
Oh, wow. A lot of them are terrible.
Yeah,
a lot of them are awful, awful movies.
Still in 4K. I'll stand by the first four. After that, it gets a little dicey.
Yeah, yeah. And I think
that's fair.
I actually saw five, and for what it was, I thought it was actually a fun film. So.
Yeah, I mean, look, if five has a lot of kills in it, once you get over the twist, which some people just can't let go of. If for some reason, if you have not watched a movie from 1985 or whenever that was, you know, I don't want to spoil it for you. But, yeah, I mean, they're fun. Like Jason X is a terrible movie, but there's fun stuff in it.
Yes, that is true. Both of those things are true.
So I even like elements of part nine of Jason Goes to Hell. It's just a thing, and part of it's nostalgia, part of it's just an appreciation for a man in a mask murdering 20-year-olds pretending to be teenagers.
I have two
questions tied together. One is, is Freddy vs. Jason part of this box set? And two,
yes.
Phil, have you seen that?
It is, and I have not seen it.
Really?
Oh. I've only seen one and five, and I saw the first 15 minutes of two, and it was kind of good, but I just never got back to it.
Yeah, man, you're going to have to watch everything.
Freddy vs. Jason is a great movie, but I will say it's a whole hell of a lot of fun.
It is, and I was like, I remember fans bitching about that when it came out, and it basically was because the Friday the 13th fans were upset because it wasn't a Friday the 13th movie, and the Nightmare on Elm Street fans were upset because it wasn't a Nightmare on Elm Street movie, and basically the Uber fans were disappointed, and anyone else who just wanted to have a good time with it enjoyed it. I thought it was a lot of fun. It's from the same director who did Bride of Chucky. I had a blast with it. It might actually be, if it's not my favorite one in the Friday the 13th franchise, it's up there for me because it's just a blast. And people complain, well, they changed. This was never part of Jason's mythology. It's like, well, if you've watched the series, Jason's mythology, like, literally changes every movie.
Yeah. I mean, even one movie, he fights a psychic girl.
Right. Which was supposed to be.
It's the same with Freddy too. Freddy's retconned constantly throughout that series.
Yeah. You know, to the point where they both made them evil worms at one point in order, because they were going to do the Versus, the original Versus movie. The idea, I guess, was to have it two evil worms fight each other or something. I don't understand that. I do think the worst film out of this two series is still, for me, Freddy's Dead, Nightmare 6. I think that one is really awful. Otherwise, I think the Nightmare 2 films tend to be a little bit of a cut above. But I think Friday the 13th tends to be the most even keel.
They both have their own thing.
Yes, they do.
Right.
But the Nightmare films at least could be more visually inventive because of the way it was going. I think that Friday the 13th films are most even keel out of all the big horror franchises, because the best one isn't really that great. And even the worst one still kind of delivers what you want to see.
I was surprised how good Friday the 13th Part 1 actually was. I thought it was going
to
just be
film. To be fair, really Bill, people usually aren't talking about that one when they're talking about the Friday the 13th movies.
Right.
Usually, when they talk about the Friday the 13th movies as a collective, they're talking about the ones with Jason.
Yeah, that's true. That's fair. Yeah.
But if I'm comparing that one to Halloween, Nightmare on Elm Street, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, I think it's still a bit below those.
I'll agree with you, but it's still pretty close to being as good as those.
It's still. I was surprised when I rewatched it a couple of years ago. I was surprised at how relatively solid it was compared to the things that follow. And because I did a binge on all the films sometime during the podcast, which could have been any point in the last 9 years.
Let's be honest. Any of these series of movies are really the first one's going to be a cut above all the rest, usually by a significant margin.
Right. It's only been kind of a recent thing where the second film sometimes is better than the first one.
Sure. Yeah. And you do have a couple something like I saw Nightmare on Elm Street 3, and that's a really solid film. And that's
that one's
third,
pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty good. So now let's see, Mike, me, you, Barrett, and Kevin Letts are doing another podcast.
He doesn't want to talk about
it. I'm sorry. You were talking to me?
You're right there.
Yeah, that kind of equals the podcast.
No, I already
right
did my bit. I did my bit. I thought I was off the hook for a second one.
Just when you
I
think
thought Barrett
you're
was
out,
here, you would use him.
All right.
I thought you would ask Barrett.
All right, I'll ask Barrett because no one wants to talk about not the podcast, but the show. Barrett,
the show.
Go ahead then, Mike. Go ahead.
I didn't want to talk about the podcast.
All right, Barrett, what's the podcast that
we are doing? A travel guide to Lovecraft Country, where we go over the Lovecraft Country show and in intimate detail every episode, every week.
Yeah, the best is two of our listeners said they love the podcast, but they hate the show.
Yeah.
It's awesome. And I was initially invited on the show and declined, and I think I made a wise choice.
Yes. I put it in, and I told Eric I enjoyed the Miss TV show more than this show. But
that's harsh. I think the Miss TV show sucked more than this one did.
But at least I enjoyed it more because I love ripping into it and every week saying how terrible it was. This one is just like, there's nothing to say. It's like, anyway. And it was a good running meme that, why is Phil watching the show if he hates the Miss?
I will be very curious. I will be very curious, Eric, how you feel when you watch Lovecraft Country, because there are a lot of people out there who love the show. And Phil doesn't believe me.
I have purchased the book on Kindle. So I'm going to read that before I watch the show.
Uh-oh.
And eventually,
we talk about that too. Kevin read the book.
A year from now, when I get around to watching the show, I'll let you know what I think.
Right. So the the show does deviate from the book.
Yes.
They usually do.
I think it's safe to say that, yeah. No, this one significantly, I think.
Right, well, because it adds several. There's apparently a number of plot points and whole episodes that are completely not in the book. So just to be aware, it is its own thing. I know you don't have a problem with adaptations being different. Just saying it is apparently very different. So
yeah, okay. Yeah.
So it's sort of like we take Jaws and reverse it. How, like, you know, imagine like you read a really good shark book and then you went to see a movie and they inserted the subplot about the scientist screwing the sheriff's wife.
Oh, see, I thought you were going to say it's a movie about a shark swimming around puking up people.
No. Where they add stuff in as opposed to be taking stuff out. Which, as I said on that podcast, that was like where the downfall was with The Walking Dead, was when they were taking nice, lean storylines and padding it out and making it slow and tedious.
That can work if you're starting with a short story, but usually doesn't work as well if you have a full length novel.
Right. Yeah, I said in the last episode of Lovecraft Country podcast, is usually you have a 450-page book, and then you go through it and remove stuff because you only have a few hours to make a movie or a TV show. You don't usually do the opposite and add more to it, you know?
To turn it into a 10-episode series, right? A 400-page book, you could get, like, you know, if you're adapting everything in a 400-page book, you could easily get a 400-page book into a two-hour movie if you put everything in it into, like, a two-part miniseries.
We're almost there. It used to be that you could not do a television series that had less than 22 episodes in the season, right? And now the streaming companies have figured out that you don't have to make that many episodes. You can make fewer. But really, a lot of them are still a little afraid to go under 10. They got to hit that double digit to have a full season. And I think eventually we'll get to the point where they're not afraid of it anymore, but we're not quite there.
Right. Yep. So, but yeah, I mean, you know, if you do like it, you know, good for you, right? I mean, that's all that matters. But I won't say anymore.
I believe you that it's bad. I'll still probably check it out at least.
I disagree with. I am probably the one who likes the show the most, I guess, out of the group. I will dispute how bad it is. I do think there are editing problems and storytelling problems. I think the acting is good. I think the music is good. The production values are good. There's some stuff in terms of the storytelling. So it's not like it's a cheaply made, you know.
Well, the CGI
CGI is spotty because it's a cable TV series, you know, that, you know, that put most of its money elsewhere.
A series made by the same station that did Game of Thrones,
which did not do CGI monsters its first season.
Right.
Fair enough.
I think it's best to move on because I'm going to be forced to talk about the next episode in the next podcast, and I don't want to have to spend 10 minutes now talking about the same show because it's just a terrible show. It's just rotten.
Okay, fair enough.
This is Phil going all. Phil's trying to go up there going all hush on us with this too. So
yeah, that's how he is.
No, this is a little different. This has nothing to do with asparagus.
Hear something, Mike? Watch this. Hey, Phil, what'd you think of The Outsider?
Say it was better than Lovecraft Country.
I still say it's better than Lovecraft Country. Yeah, yeah. And that show I stopped after six episodes. I was like, this show's no good. And I stopped watching it.
By the way, Phil, this is all your fault. You're the one that made somebody talk about the podcast. So,
yeah, well, again, as I told you, Eric, if I had known The Boys was going to be weekly or that Ridley Scott Wolf show, I would have suggested those over this any day.
If you'd done any research before committing to a podcast?
Yes. I take it.
Well, this has been a dispute since the very beginning because he, you know, the idea of knowing what it's about.
But as the season
the whole
went
idea
on,
it seemed to come into being within 24 hours.
Well, let's put what Barrett brought this up.
magical realism and all that crap, right? He watched A Discovery of Witches, which is the same thing, and that show is awesome. This show, Lovecraft, it's just no good. It's just no good. This is my
part of it. Yeah, but part of it is that you resented it for not being the thing you wanted it to be, even though you didn't know what it was going into it. You just said, this has this title, I want it to be this thing, even though you had no reason to judge it as this thing,
right,
other than by the title.
But
the first episode would still kind of lead you to believe that it was going to be like that.
But
I get that, unless you've read the book, which I guess it's not that even in the book.
We're 7 episodes into the show now, and it's still just not good. And it has
nothing. No, we're 8, aren't we?
Yeah, 8, whatever.
You've been podcasting with Phil for almost 10 years now. How are you surprised by this?
I didn't say I was surprised.
Okay.
All right, well, and also, Mike could have a point at the beginning. I was like, this ain't magical. This ain't what I thought it was going to be. And you're right. But still, 8 episodes later, I could still determine whether a show is
You're still arguing that, you know, 8 episodes in, that it's not what you signed up for.
Yeah.
No, I'm already arguing it's just not good. Anyway, let's move on. I can't talk. I have to talk about it on Monday. I don't want to talk about it. Just
only 2 more episodes, Phil.
I know.
We're almost
I'll text
done.
You about it later, Phil.
Yeah, thanks, Eric. And also on the Dark Discussions Network of podcasts is about, I think, 20 other podcasts that you can listen to. So go and check them out. You can find the feed under Dark Discussions Podcast, or if you want all 20-something podcasts, you can go and search for Dark Discussion Network of Podcasts. So there's a feed that brings all the podcasts to you by everybody that is on the network. So that's a cool option as well. And I know some folks like Trent Trucker, or however he likes to call himself, one of our listeners, he actually is now doing that. So he gets all Trent. Yeah, Trent. Exactly. But he goes Trent Trucker or Trucker Trent, I think. I forget how he goes. Yeah. So Don and Ellie does it too that way, where he gets all the podcasts. So check it out. All right. So let's give our final thoughts on this film here. Thank God it's not Lovecraft Country. And Mike, let's start with you.
I like this film. At the start, I do think, and I'll echo Phil said what Phil said, is that I was thinking this might be like a top 3 film of the year. Now I'm probably going to put it, could still very well end up in a top 20, especially given the year that it is. I still think it's an enjoyable film if you're into A, foreign films, and B, science fiction horror or monster films. I would certainly recommend giving it a shot.
All right, very good. Let's see. Let's go with you, Barrett. We'll go to Eric last because I know he's having some technical issues with his mute button right now. So we'll go to you next, Barrett.
Okay. I really enjoyed this film. I wouldn't call it like my top 5. It's definitely, you know, probably in my top 10 of the year so far. I enjoyed it. It was pretty good. And if you like sci-fi horror, I think it fits that bill pretty nicely. Has a few flaws, but I think we discussed those pretty well.
All right, very good. Abe?
I did enjoy this film. I thought the creature was really cool. Performances were really solid. And there was some nice little moments exploring certain themes. That being said, I thought that it kind of started to feel a little weaker as it went to more of the familiar territory and some cliches, and the whole subplot of the orphanage and everything else felt almost rather unnecessary. If it hadn't been removed, I think it would have tightened the pace in a bit and wouldn't hurt the story at all. Overall, it was a good experience, and I certainly recommend it, especially those who enjoy the science fiction horror blend. If you're looking for something, a creature feature especially, give it a shot.
All right, very good. Yeah, for me, I really loved the first hour or first half or whatever point that Eric mentioned
where he thinks we were talking about. And that part was really good. So I guess if you go, you know, first, second, and third act. So the first two acts were really good. I loved the film and thought it was going to be a possible classic horror sci-fi film. But based off the third act, which was a little bit weaker, it's just a good film. It's highly enjoyable, worth checking out for sure. And it's possibly could be a top 20 film, similar to what Mike said, based off of the year. But all in all, solid enough, and good acting, and good special effects. Eric?
Yeah, I think we're all on the same page here. I think this is, I could have done without the orphan shit. But other than that, I think this is a solid sci-fi horror movie, definitely worth checking out.
All right, sounds good. So, once again, this is a 2020 film, Sputnik. You can find it anywhere that is available for rental, VOD rental. It is a Russian language film, subtitles, as we mentioned, starring Oksana Akinshina and Fyodor Bondarchuk, as well as Pyotr Fyodorov and Anton Vasilyev. I read somewhere that they are fairly popular actors over in Russia. 88% good reviews, has been noticed by all the big review organizations, and yeah, check it out. So with all that stated, Eric, why don't you leave us out?
All right, thanks for tuning in. Listen, let's talk about Sputnik. Come back next time, we'll have another topic.